second half of the People Show coming to you live from the Kintech Studio. Dick Bizarre here with you. Ben Costa running the show. Joining us now is Ian McIntyre, this insider brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Ian, how was Tootsie's last night?
I don't know how to answer. Well, I wasn't there.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of something funny to say because there have been lots of Tootsie's visits over the years with the Canucks and some Tootsie-based stories. There was one semi-scandalous story during the West Coast Express era about a team outing to Tootsie's and who was there and who wasn't and what it all represented. And I know because I was there that a lot of what people were speculating on back in Vancouver was incorrect. But no, I had a full and successful travel day yesterday, flying to Nashville through Chicago, and got in shortly before midnight and decided to actually stay in and go to bed.
The responsible Ian McIntyre, as we've always said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Nashville's a fun place. There isn't anywhere in the National Hockey League that has changed more in the time that I've been covering it.
Mm-hmm.
Than Nashville, like the way that it's grown and evolved from just being kind of a hockey tonk country music hub to kind of, and this isn't my original term, but somebody mentioned to me, I think it's pretty fitting. It's almost like the Las Vegas of the East now. A lot of people from the South and the East of the U.S. come here for their holidays. So it's different. But the hockey rink that I'll be at tomorrow night is just out my window, which is good, nice and close. And there's been a lot of great games in there already for a relatively young franchise and some history with the Canucks, as we know.
Yep.
And we're going to get another chapter of it authored tomorrow and on Sunday.
One of the things I've marveled at this season for the Canucks is their ability to put things in the rearview mirror and carry on and show a level of resilience. And you know, we spent so much time in the season saying they haven't lost three in a row until they did, but they overcome. The mood today at the rink, getting ready for game three, what did you feel?
Yeah, they were upbeat. It was a good practice, and they're not going to have many of these. So maybe that's why. Like, the players know, it's not like you're going to have a full practice again on Saturday, although who knows? We'll see how the Friday game goes. But no, it was upbeat. Everybody was there, as you know, including Tyler Myers, and even Thatcher Demko was there, alas, just standing beside the glass and looking on, wishing, obviously, that he could play, but he's not going to play. But it was a good practice, and you know, a lot of guys were upbeat. I agree with you that it's one of the greatest strengths of this team, in fact, and well, it's being tested now, but it is one of their greatest strengths that they have been able to manage emotions all year long. As I don't know if you've played the Ian Cole audio where he talks about if you win three games in November, there people are willing to give you the Stanley Cup, and then you lose three in January and you're all frauds and the team should be broken apart. And that's how things feel at times, because it is such an emotional game, especially playing in a Canadian market where the audience is so captivated by everything, the good, the bad, the ugly. Nothing goes unnoticed. Nothing goes without a lot of comment and discussion and debate. And, you know, the Canucks have been able to manage all that. But just as playoffs are another level of intensity and effort and everything else, managing emotions is at another level as well. And that's their challenge. I think, honestly, I think had the shot attempts been 84-35 for Nashville and the Canucks had lost 4-1, It would have a much, much different feel around this team. As Ian Cole said, that would indicate that you've got a lot of problems. They don't feel like they have a lot of problems. They just feel like they need to do a better job of getting pucks through traffic on net. And, you know, these two games, the Canucks haven't played their best, but they've played better than Nashville at 5-on-5. And now they have to find a way to just, you know, get through that wall of humanity in front of UC Saros and create a few more chances than what they created in game two.
The other day you wrote, I think after game one, you wrote with a third line. And watching this through two games, as you've just detailed, like they've been the better team and they've carried play and they've got the overwhelming shot volume to support that. You know, their edge is having those three centers. And yesterday I was just kind of wondering is if they even really need that edge in this series because they are misfiring in the top six. Do they need to have all three guys down the middle and still create that Joshua Lindholm Garland line, but could you maybe elevate everybody up and squish them all into the top six?
Yeah, I don't really think that's the way to go. But the answer to your question is yes, of course they can do that if they want. And we did see the Lotto line have more than just an occasional shift together in that last game. I don't know at the end of the night what their ice time together was, but I'm guessing they had a half dozen shifts at least. And so that's one way to try to load up. But, you know, Tocchet is, and he reiterated it during the series in one of his press availabilities already, that, you know, he just feels like the best teams, the most successful teams have a third line. And we know the Canucks have this great third line. I think they're more inclined to, you know, move pieces around in the top six and maybe elevate others to that line than break up the Lindholm line because I think they really like that. But it's possible, and especially, I mean, if you do play the Lotto line together for any period of time, essentially your second line becomes the Lindholm Garland Joshua line. So, you know, I just think right now part of it is messaging from the coaching staff that, hey, you know, there's things we need to do better. We're all disappointed. We, you know, had 66 shots that missed the net or were blocked in game two, which we lost. We all wish it was 2-0, not 1-1. But I think in terms of messaging, it's that, you know, we're a good team. We've played all right. We just need to play a little bit better. And I don't think Tocchet wants to make, you know, any sweeping change that's going to send a message like, oh, we're in trouble. Now we got to do something drastic. I don't think they're at that stage yet.
Fronting has become the term du jour of this series. Is there a morsel of information that you've gleaned through 24 hours there in Nashville that of how the Canucks are going to solve this fronting issue?
Well, I asked Tocchet in his scrum, and he just gave me a one-word answer, but the word was bingo, which made me feel pretty good. He then said I should be coaching, at which I responded, well, I'd like to have a coach's salary at least. But I think net front is the area to watch tomorrow night. And no, I don't have any insider information. Rick didn't take me to the coach's room and X and O for me how they're going to beat the Nashville Predators. But I do think that we need to look at net front battles in a slightly different way, because typically, you know, and forever, we have thought about that in terms of the defending player trying to prevent the attacking player from taking the position that he wants. And I think we need to see, and we're going to see, the Canucks trying to reverse that, where it's actually Vancouver forwards who need to prevent Nashville defensemen from taking the spots that they want unopposed. And so I think we're going to see a little more physical engagement, maybe a little more movement. Maybe you see players when they're being fronted move higher to the slot. So you push the defender higher to the slot, which gives you even more space between that last layer of defense and the goaltender to get the puck and try and create chances, you know, rebound chances, second chances, deflections, things like that. I did talk to JT Miller on my own today, and he said there's a lot of room there. There's a lot of room because Nashville is fronting so high in the slot. There's a lot of room behind their defensemen and around Saros if the Canucks can get the puck there. And that's not, you know, getting the necessarily the puck cleanly through and into the net. It's just getting the puck behind that layer. So now that suddenly, by definition, if the defenseman's fronting you and you get it behind him, suddenly your body is between him and the goal, and you've got a pretty good opportunity to create a scoring chance and get some shots. So I think it's all going to be a lot of interesting stuff between the hash marks down to the goal line tomorrow night.
Well, I'm looking forward to reading your piece on the front page of Sportsnet.ca. I've heard fronting so many times in the last 48 hours. So I'm kind of done with it.
Well, it's a basketball term, isn't it? Yeah. I know it's a footy term. I don't know if they use it in England. But
I've always referred to it as north side or south side in footy.
Oh, I haven't heard that. Yeah. But we do talk about front the guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's going to be worth watching. Elias Pettersson, who I had a really interesting chat with today, who recognizes that he needs to be better. And it was interesting talking about Pettersson as well. So that's another issue to watch. And then, of course, as long as Thatcher Demko's out, we're always going to have an eye on Casey DeSmith and see how he handles things. But honestly, the way Vancouver played in Game 2, I don't think DeSmith was at the top of the list, anywhere near the top of the list of issues that they're concerned about.
Well, we'll look for your latest at .ca. We know you got to run. Thank you very much.
Okay, Bick. Thanks for having me on.
It's Ian McIntyre, Triple Threat. Hear him on radio. We see him on TV with Murph on the digital clips on your... Actually, I don't know if Ian's clips are on TikTok or IG, but nevertheless, you see the videos when you're reading on .ca.
He's everywhere.
His in fantastic writing. There he goes. The Intrepid Reporter back at it. The Insider brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online. DLEAMC.com. I tried doing a little EA Sports spin there. EAMC.
You know what? I thought of it when you were doing it, yeah. So it worked.
That's like the voice of voices, right? It's just like if you could just walk around all day and be just like EA Sports.
Have you seen that TikTok?
Oh yeah,
it's when the guy found him.
It has to be modified, right?
Oh, for sure.
Right, like it has to be. But it'd be amazing if you could just walk around with that like filtered voice all the time. I wouldn't stop talking all day.
You'd take one of our jobs.
All right, a lot to get into. 650. Keep the thoughts. Tyler, I'd love to see Petey between Garland and Joshua. You know, just in my mind's eye yesterday, I was just, you know, I guess the edge they have on that three centers, you know, Ben, you and I were talking about this yesterday. It's clearly working, right? So I don't want to, like, dispute that it's not working. But do they need it is basically my point. And you try to craft different versions of what a top six could look like. I'll just give you a couple here. Joshua Miller-Garland with Suter, Petey, Lindholm. And so I'm putting Hoglander, Bluger, Besser together on a third line.
See you later, Besser.
Well, look, like who's been the... We did this exercise yesterday. Like who's been the best three wingers?
I think that Besser's the type of guy that needs one of those... He needs Miller for him to be at his best.
Sure. But like that's not a bad line. Dude, no. You're making six and change here. Teddy Bluger Hoglander is not a terrible reality to live in. And then PDG Lafferty McKayev. Look, I don't love that, but you lose a bit of your edge, but you start loading up the top six a bit. You can do Lindholm Miller Besser with Suter PD McKayev, Joshua Bluger Garland. So it's a bit of a different load up, but still, you get Hoglander, Lafferty, PDG. That's really demoting Hoglander, who, you know, I think has kind of been pushed around a little bit in this series. We haven't really seen the big moment of that buzzsaw. Maybe he could be one of the villains that we were discussing earlier. Or do you do, as Tyler mentioned here, Joshua, Pettersson, Garland? Load that lineup. And Suter, Miller, Lindholm scenario. Well, there's Besser out in that top six again. But hey, like, so no time for feelings right now. You got to perform.
So I don't mind the Pettersson with Joshua and Garland.
Mm-hmm.
I completely buy IMAX point, though. that this team's confident still.
100%.
That they feel like they very well could or should be up 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
And that they've been the better team 5-on-5. And so Tockett's kind of looking at this like, I don't want to give the notion that something's wrong. When IMAX said that, I was like, that's a great point. And I think that's very valid. Now, if tomorrow they lay another egg, and maybe they have 87
shots.
Well,
hang on. They didn't lay an egg. They just didn't, hit empty nets.
Right. But if they lose, maybe per se, and it's just not working, then by Sunday, I think you start to look at other options. But you don't do that for tomorrow's game.
Mm-hmm.
If you go down 2-1, though, and game four is obviously on the road.
Must win.
No. I hate throwing that term around. It is not a must win.
It's huge.
It's a very important game.
Categorically.
Because game four is the most important game of a series.
Yeah. I think you pushed me yesterday to come up with one because I kept saying odd numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say game three is the most important one. Game three. Most important game of the series tomorrow until the next one.
which would be game four.
All right, 650. Keep going with the thoughts. So do want to finish a bit on the NFL draft, just over an hour away. Look, the Canucks are in the playoffs. We've barely touched on it. But big day today. This is actually a really fun draft, too, because it's quarterbacks, and not just quarterbacks that are inflated because of positional need and some teams are desperate. Good quarterbacks, like really good, potentially all-pro style QBs. Like the best version of Jaden Daniels, if it works out, could be a highlight reel. I like JJ McCarthy most than most. So like that could be someone that features on a winning team. Obviously, Drake May, I've spoken at length about it. Obviously, Caleb Williams is going number one. So it's like quarterbacks are going to define this draft. What do you need around quarterbacks? Wide receivers, three studs at the top and littered with a bunch of, you know, choose your own adventure style guys that are very interesting and have different profiles that can fit an offense and whatever team's looking for. Very capable guys littered through this draft. What else do you need on offense? Guys to block for the quarterback. There's studs in this draft. There could be, you know, projections. 10.5 is, I think, the line on offensive linemen to go in the first round. 10.5.
That's wild.
You need some hog mollies, you're going to find them in this draft. So it's like it's loaded for exactly what you want. As far as Seahawks sitting at 16, look, a Seahawks sitting in the first round, you just anticipate trade back. But for me, like I'm sitting there thinking, if you can get one of, like, my big priority has been interior trenches. Interior defensive line, interior offensive line. If a Graham Barton is there, hopefully you snag him. Looks like a guy, like a Zach Martin clone a little bit. Now, that guy's going to the Hall of Fame. You get to that career, fantastic. But that profile of prospect, that's what he looks like to me. Defensive line, Byron Murphy, Johnny Newton, they're the guys that are kind of sitting in that range. They look like they could be some of the best defenders in this draft. And they're in that range, 16 to 20. The Seahawks trade back, they still get one of those guys. Murphy could go higher, but nevertheless, those guys look like they're not just interior trench defenders, but they look like they could fit Mike McDonald's defense as well. The thing is, the Seahawks have some holes. They could go elsewhere. And you saw what Mike McDonald did last year in Baltimore. Kyle Hamilton, the secondary. I know they picked Devin Witherspoon, 5th overall last year. Hugo Cooper to Jean, like... That's like a hybrid defensive back. He's not just a pure outside corner. I don't look at Terrion Arnold. I don't look at Kool-Aid McKinstry. I don't look at Mitchell. They have to get a pure corner. You get like a hybrid versatile guy who could play all over the place like Devin Witherspoon. A couple of banshees running around in the secondary could be a lot of fun for the Seahawks. And then suddenly a depressed safety market across the league. Could you get best in class? The Seahawks have a lot of options that, you know, traditionally you go into a draft, you think, hey, I'm just looking for one position, and I'd be furious if they don't get this guy. I go into this draft for the Seahawks. I look at this. If you get one of like 4 or 5 guys, Barton, DeJean, Newton, throw in, who did I just miss there? Newton and Barton, Newton. Oh, Murphy. Murphy. Murphy the second. Then another guy. If one of the other offensive tackle slides, Fatanu, Fuanga, if one of them slides, like, hey, Seahawks could do pretty well today at 16, or if they even trade back, a little bit to still get one of these guys. I think they do all right. They had some luxury last year with Witherspoon, and they'll go get JSN as well. How do they back it up with a draft today? That's what I'm looking at. One of those fives, and the 12s are feeling all right. But we'll talk about it. Actually, I'm not on tomorrow. Early game, obviously, with the Canucks 4:30. Canucks Central will be early. I'll join them for a little bit as well. But then game three tomorrow. Get ready for it. Looks like, by the way, the Canucks have sold out lower bowl tickets for the watch party. Upper bowl tickets have been announced, so you can get more details at Canucks.com/watch if you want to be part of the atmosphere still at Rogers Arena. All right. Sat and Dan on the way on a Thursday edition of Canucks Central. I'm out of here. Enjoy the draft. Watch draft day if you still have time. Watch it on 2x speed. Do it that way. It's fine.
Fine, I'll do it.
See you tomorrow.